5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
You're listening to Working Forward, presented by Symetra. In this limited podcast series, hosted by Todd Zenn, we explore the future of work from a variety of viewpoints and discuss the challenges and opportunities ahead.
Welcome back to the Working Forward podcast, where we explore the evolving world of work and discuss how individuals and organizations can adapt, lead, and thrive, and ultimately build a more inclusive future of work. I'm your host, Todd Zenn. So if you've been following along, you know that we've reached the end of season two, or maybe you don't, but I'm excited to announce that our episode here today is our finale for season two. And we've got a really powerful and thought-provoking episode to wrap out the season. Our topic today is, it's a big one. We're going to be discussing resilience, and we're going to be talking pretty boldly and broadly about how do we redefine truly what is possible. So today, I am deeply honored to be joined by Chris Waddell, someone whose story is nothing short of extraordinary. It's not easy to introduce Chris. I did some work in preparation, of course, and you know, he's a man of many accomplishments, but I'll do my best to get it started. Chris is a Hall of Fame Paralympic athlete. He's an author. He is a speaker. He's also the founder of the One Revolution Foundation, and among a litany of athletic feats, he is the first nearly unassisted paraplegic to summit Mount Kilimanjaro, and he's really been redefining what's possible ever since that achievement. Chris brings us an unmatched perspective on resilience, reinvention, and what it truly means to work forward. So, Chris, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here, Todd. Thank you for having me on.
So I'm also thrilled to welcome in my friend and colleague, David Sneeweis. He is our Vice President of Workforce Benefit Sales here at Symetra. This is a tough act to follow, but David brings an enormous amount of perspective as well to this conversation. He brings decades of experience helping organizations drive meaningful impact, and he's going to share some really great insights around how companies can create a more inclusive and forward-thinking culture. And he's really going to chime in and emphasize some of Chris's points and how they tie back to us here at Symetra and what we are trying to accomplish. He's also a longtime friend and collaborator with Chris, so he is the perfect person to join us and contribute to the conversation. So David, my friend, welcome to the show.
Todd, thanks for having me, and I'm still stuck on the fact you said I was here decades, so it makes me feel really old, but we'll work through that today. So, looking forward to the conversation.
Well, wonderful. So, you know, today we're going to build on the theme of our episode and even broadly our show. You know, I'm excited to talk about what does it truly mean to work forward? We want to work forward with intention, with resilience, and really with a renewed focus on the power of human potential. So that's a lot. And, you know, without further ado, I think we should get right to it. So my first question here is for Chris. And Chris, I would just love it if you could share with our audience a little bit about yourself and your incredible journey.
You know, Todd, I love that you call it a journey, because really it is a journey. And I think that when we get to realize the nature of moving from one place to the other, because we always feel like we should have it all figured out right in the beginning, right? But the idea of a journey is that we're continuing to learn and grow and dream as we move along. So, I mean, journey in some ways, it's tough to figure out where it starts, right? I mean, I think in some ways, it starts with my accident. You know, I had a skiing accident. I was a ski racer in college. I was at Middlebury College. I was skiing Division I. I wanted to prove myself to myself. I think I'd been an athlete my whole life. Like growing up, it's always where I gravitated. They were my heroes. The athletes were my heroes, and it's how I wanted to see myself. And we'll get into a bit of the resilience, because I think that is part of what we saw and what we played as kids, you know. I mean, like as a little kid, that whole idea of playing in the backyard, and you get to be the the hero in the World Series, right? I mean, this is the scenario that you always draw up. It's like, oh, bases loaded, down by three runs, and it's two strikes against the best pitcher in the league, and you get to hit the home run, right? I mean, this is what we do, and I think that in some ways we lose sight of that as we continue to grow. And as I was looking at college, I wanted to prove to myself that I had inside of me what it took to be successful. I was leaving my youth in a lot of ways and moving into adulthood, and I wanted to prove to myself. And so skiing was where I wanted to do that. And I put out a big goal. I wanted to be an All-American, which was a huge goal, and these kinds of things. And I started training in a way that I wanted to give myself an opportunity each day to prove to myself that I was getting a little bit better. So my goal in dry land training was to push myself to the point that I wanted to quit. And if I made it there and then went past, then I was getting a little bit better. And so I did not get a chance, unfortunately, to prove myself on the snow, because my first day of Christmas vacation, I went home and I returned to the mountain where I'd grown up. My brother and I drove up there and met up with a few buddies, and we took a couple of runs. And this was the 20th of December. It becomes like a second birthday in some days. The 20th of December, 1988. And there was one strip of snow down the mountain, but we were going to train that day. And we warmed up and we took a couple of runs, and then we took one more, and my ski popped off in the middle of a turn. I don't remember anything after my ski popping off. I was conscious, but I broke two vertebrae and damaged the spinal cord. And my life changed really significantly in that moment. But I also had a moment when I was in the hospital when I recognized that, like, this was the worst thing that I could imagine happening to me. But at the same time, I was still me. And I think that's a big part of this whole journey, as you say, is the realization of, like, well, I'm still me, and how can these things that have happened to me be necessary steps along the way to becoming who I want to be? You know, I said I wanted to be a successful person, and it's like, well, you know, you become a successful person by dealing with the problems that face you, and you go, oh, well, this is a little bit bigger than I had anticipated. And so I, you know, was in the hospital, and funny enough, it was the strongest, I feel like the most powerful that I've ever been in my life. And I think we all kind of have this belief that we're more powerful than we've ever demonstrated. And it certainly was true for me. But in the hospital, I felt like I had to win the moment with myself. And winning the moment with myself was the way to demonstrate that I was getting better, and it was the way to demonstrate my power. And it's that infinitesimal kind of thing, the really small thing of just winning that moment with myself that made me more powerful. And I got better and better, and I left the hospital 2 months after my accident. I returned to Middlebury College, which was an almost 200-year-old school at the time, built mostly out of granite on the top of a hill in Vermont in February. You know, and you look at that and go, that was crazy. But it was the greatest decision I could have made, because it allowed me to reclaim my life. I was back with my friends. I was back with my peers. I wasn't the guy in the hospital. I was the guy there. And it forced me to learn a lot of stuff that I wouldn't have learned very quickly had I stayed in the hospital, or had I been released to home or whatever. So in 2 weeks, I learned what probably would have taken me months, because I had to. And I, 362 days after the accident, I started to ski again in a monoski. And I am sorry, I am deceiving your public by saying that I started to fall in a monoski. I'd never seen one. I'd never seen anyone ski in one. My coach had seen people ski that summer. He'd been training out at Mount Hood, and he saw some of the guys on what was the U.S. disabled ski team at the time. And I came back in the fall, and he said, we want you to be part of the team. We want to get you a monoski. And so he got me the monoski, and it arrived in the middle of exams. And so we went up to the mountain and went to ski. And I did. I just fell over and fell over and fell over. You know, and there's a part of it that you go, okay, well, falling is part of learning. but I didn't understand something that I had known so well in my life, like the ability to move on the mountain, to get from place to place. Suddenly it became much, much smaller, and it became much, much harder to figure out how I could get to the place where I would have just sort of stopped before and not even thought anything about it. It took me forever to get there. When I finished my first run, it took me about an hour to take my first run on a relatively easy trail. And I was skiing with my father and mother and brother, and they said, well, do you want to take another run? And it took me a while to think about it. I was like, I don't know if I could do that again. I don't know if I could do that run. So it was that hard. About 2 weeks into the process, I went to my first race, and something kind of clicked. Like, there's a way that you carry yourself as a ski racer. Before the race, we inspect the course. I started inspecting the course like I knew what I was doing. I did know what I was supposed to do. I didn't necessarily know how to do it. But it was an interesting just click in my head that said, you are a ski racer. And I actually won my first race. It was not a huge race by any means, but I won my first race and went fast enough that I had a qualifying time for the national championships. So I started doing that, and sports were how I defined myself as a kid, but also afterwards, they were how I reclaimed my pride in my body. Because the accident had taken so much of who I was to recognize that I could sweat, that I could fall down, and I'd still be okay, that I wasn't delicate. When I was in the hospital, I felt like my back, my spine felt like one of those fluorescent light bulbs, you know, the long light bulb tubes. I felt like I was going to shatter. And it was nice to know that I couldn't shatter. And so from there, I ended up going and, you know, eventually making the U.S. disabled ski team. I'd always run as in preparation for skiing. So I started wheelchair racing, which is our equivalent of running. I had seen these guys race in the Boston Marathon before. And suddenly I had another sport. And part of it was following your heroes. Like, I mean, I tell people all the time, I am greedy when it comes to heroes. Like I pick up heroes all the time. And one of my heroes was a guy named Jim Martinson, who was a guy that I skied with. He built my first mono ski. But he also was a Boston Marathon winner. And I think I really picked up wheelchair racing in a lot of ways to be like Jim. I wanted to be like him. And so I graduated on skis. Middlebury has a cap and gown skiing procession. Graduated on skis, hopped on a plane the next day, flew to Colorado and became a full-time athlete, and eventually went to 4 Winter Paralympics and 3 Summer Paralympics, and, you know, won 12 medals on the winter side and won one very significant medal on the summer side. So, So I think in a lot of ways that was a part of my journey that eventually led to Kilimanjaro as well. You know, and I think that Kilimanjaro came about because I'd been pushed by passion. That was the thing that motivated me. It got me up earlier in the morning, one more set, one more rep, that kind of thing, pushed me to the point that I wanted to quit and then move beyond it. And I felt betrayed by my passion when I retired, that it had brought me to the top of the mountain. But at the same time, then I fell off a cliff and fell into complete obscurity and suddenly became the guy in the wheelchair and had to go through what most people go through right after the accident. But I had to go through it, and the depression of just going, who am I? Will I ever be good again? Did I peak at 25 years old? What am I going to do? And Kilimanjaro was ultimately about taking what I had done, the success that I had done, the exposure that I'd garnered, to be able to make a statement about myself and about, you know, 15% of the population that's effectively invisible, the people with disabilities who, you know, we're taught not to stare at someone who looks different when we're when we're little kids. We become invisible. And I wanted it to be about the human part of not, oh, it's too bad what happened to you, but instead, like, what do you do? What do you have to teach me? And Kilimanjaro was about a lot more than me. I wanted to get to the top to show that we're all climbing a mountain. We're all going to struggle. And those who struggle best are the ones who are most successful. And sometimes those struggles can really be a huge benefit to getting to become who we want to be on that journey, to realizing ourselves in that journey. So.
Well, thank you, Chris. That was inspiring and really truly fascinating. I think what I'm so amazed by is the resilience it took to get up after the accident and do everything you did and make everything happen. But I'm also very much affected by the story of after retirement and the resilience it took to then find a purpose after that, right? You know, those achievements took a tremendous amount of resilience, and I think they really should be highlighted and venerated. It's a wonderful thing. So David, let me bring you into the conversation. So, you know, reacting to everything that you heard from Chris, I know you've known Chris for a while. Resilience is also very important to you in your day-to-day. You know, how do you define resilience? How does that resonate with you and what you do?
Well, I'd like to say I climbed a Mount Kilimanjaro or did something like that. There's just no way I could follow Chris's story and his journey. But I will tell you that, you know, resilience looks different to everyone. It looks different to me. I was reflecting on my life and thinking about failure has been a huge motivator for me. And so we fail all the time in this business, right? We fail because we don't meet a goal or we don't meet an obligation. And so you just try to get better and better. And, you know, selfishly speaking, and you mentioned this at the beginning, Todd, was my friendship. I would call it a deep friendship with Chris, who I've known for many, many years. Selfishly, I think that hearing his inspiring story reminds me that I can do better and I can do more. So sometimes we need people around us to remind us of that. And, I would say this, that if you think about our industry today, I mean, it does require a tremendous level of resilience, our customers, our brokers, our sales reps. And what I like is that what Chris, you've demonstrated through your own personal journey is this idea of resilience and helping us all reimagine what's possible. And so, you know, I love that Chris is now a brand ambassador for us because I selfishly get to listen and hear his story. And more importantly, watch people react because we all have our obstacles and our challenges. And I know Chris could talk a lot about challenges he overcame even beyond what he just described, but our industry is wrought with challenges. And so being able to lean in on someone else's story and see what Chris has done, I think reminds us that, you know, we can always find different ways to achieve the goals that we need. We might fall down, but we're going to get up and do it again, and we're going to do it better. So.
Well, that's fantastic, David. I couldn't agree more. Chris, kind of bouncing this back to you, I've had the pleasure of hearing you speak and how you tie some of the themes of again, your journey and the things you've been through to this idea of resilience and then transitioning it and translating it, I should say, to kind of how do we cultivate that in our teams, you know, that we work with every day, as David mentioned, in insurance. You know, I think in any industry, though, I think business is tough. It doesn't matter what you do. You're always getting knocked down. So how do you translate some of those lessons into kind of those of us in the business sphere, the insurance sphere, kind of trying to live these values day in and day out?
I think part of it, I mean, Dave obviously talked about the idea of surrounding yourself with great people. No one has cornered the market on resilience or motivation. Like we need other people and we need to hold ourselves responsible to other people. I'm a big fan of big goals and saying them out loud because then other people know that I've stated that goal, you know, and we're beholden to that. We're responsible to that goal that we set up. And so I think that a part of it is, surrounding ourselves with great people, but also looking at ways that we can get better. You know, I think that sometimes we have a big goal, but the personal journey part of it is how we get better as individuals, how we're able to contribute more, how we're able to gain skills. I mean, it's the most intoxicating thing that we do as human beings, right? When we improve at something, we're like, well, I want to go do that again because I'm seeing results. And the results aren't necessarily always just the bottom line results, but the results are building those skills and finding a way to get better and creating a community where it matters, where we're able to appreciate what other people are doing and be able to piggyback on that. And you know, I mean, if we're able to learn from other people, I mean, I said I'm a big fan of heroes, right? And I think that that's it. If we're able to find a way to have that hero, to have that motivation, to have that objective of continuing on that journey to be successful, but also to be more complete as a person.
Chris, if it's okay, Todd, I'd love to ask Chris
a question. No, jump in, please.
It resonates, you know, and I think about your story that you've told around your climb of Mount Kilimanjaro and this idea that you were going to do it unassisted. And you got to a place in the mountain where you couldn't do it. And, you know, I want you to talk a little bit about what that experience was like for you. But I also want to reinforce this message that you've given all of us, those of us have heard you talk, is this idea that no one climbs a mountain alone. So I'd love if you could just talk about that experience, what it was like for you emotionally, and then what happened that enabled you to get to the peak of that mountain? Because I think it relates well to what we're trying to do as an organization.
It's a lot of what Kilimanjaro offered to me. You know, before I was a ski racer and I was a wheelchair racer. And while I was on teams, it really was a lone wolf kind of thing. When you went through the start, it was you. You were the only one who was there. And obviously there were training parts of it that you worked with teams and you learned and grew from your teammates. But it was really more of a lone wolf kind of mentality. And looking at Kilimanjaro is about how are we completing ourselves? And I think I didn't go into it with the objective of being more of a team player, but as I looked at it, it was the team that really benefited me. I felt like if we didn't tell the story, it didn't happen. And so we had a team that was doing the documentary film and going through what was the story, what was an appropriate story, how could we do this, how could we fund it, how could we find viewers for it, et cetera, et cetera. Like there was a big question to answer, many big questions to answer. And the vehicle, how did we get to the top? My guide, Dave Penny, was one of those guys who was always tweaking my vehicle and helping me to build that vehicle. So the only way that I saw success was that I had to be the first one to make it to the top, was that lone wolf kind of success. If I was able to do it unassisted, then I could take that moment and make it a bigger moment. But I had to be the catalyst to make that happen. And the recognition in the point where they had to carry me, and obviously that recognition didn't happen in the moment. In the moment, I felt like I'd failed. It was abject failure in the moment because they carried me and I wasn't going to get to the top under my own power. But in continuing to look at the situation, it was the greatest gift that I could have received was this idea of working with the team. And everybody was contributing in such a way. I think I probably had the blinders on because what I was doing was so important, you know, if we want to look at it that way. And really ultimately seeing the contribution that everybody else was making and how important that contribution was to be able to get to the point where we were successful when we made it to the top. And when we made it to the top, that resonated that much more. I mean, the ripple effect of what was happening was really the important part of saying there's so many different elements of what this challenge is. And how can we find a way to address the objectives. I mean, the objective was really to bring people together, to say, hey, we're all climbing a mountain. We're all going to have our struggles. We're all going to have to find a way to be successful, and to be able to tell that in a way that people can look at it and say, you're talking about me. You're not talking about you. And I think that really ultimately that teamwork was the thing that turned it around and said, it's not about you. You're talking about me. And ultimately we're on the same journey. This is the human journey that we are on, Todd, and we are flawed beings, but we're trying and we're learning and we're finding a way to continue to get better.
Well, that's I think that's extremely well said. And I want to go back to the themes that you really both brought up. And it's this concept of teammate. We talk about teammate a lot here at Symetra. It's really central to what we do. Of course, it's an internal element. You know, I'm thrilled and honored to work on a team with David, for example. I love our partnership and my partnership with all of our leaders. But we think of the teammate term more broadly as well, right? You know, we're on the same team as our broker partners. We're on the same team as our clients. There are clients, but we're all collaborating together as a team to create fantastic outcomes or the best possible outcomes. So, David, I want to ask you, you know, what do you think makes a great teammate? What about this teammate messaging resonates with you in your day-to-day, and also when you're out talking with our customers and brokers?
Yeah, I think it's such an important word. And I'll be honest with you, prior to Chris coming aboard and hearing his story and thinking about all the things that he's done and how teammates played a role in his success of the climb of Mount Kilimanjaro, I think we underestimate the value of the team to achieve our goals. And I would argue, being in this business for decades, as you said, is that our customers and our brokers often think it's on the backs of one person to solve a problem. But there's a lot of people behind the scenes who truly make a difference. And as I've been on this journey in this business, and I've been with a number of carriers, I don't think there's any carrier that does a better job than we do around leveraging our teammates across the organization, whether it be the level of communication that occurs or anyone on our team at Symetra willing to roll up their sleeves to solve a problem. You know, you just don't see that across the industry. You see a lot of silos within certain organizations. And I think we've done a nice job to remove silos, to drive a level of inclusiveness that really promotes this idea of the teammates around us to make sure that we deliver on our promises and we deliver a strong customer experience. And I do think, Todd, to your point, our customers need teammates. They may not know it. They may not know that their carrier needs to be a good teammate, not a good vendor. A good teammate that says, you know what, the mistake was made. We don't care who made it. We're going to help you solve it. So a very powerful term that I think with Chris and your story, and as we continue to promote our brand in the market, it's very it can be a very tangible word. You know, it's not just, you know, some arbitrary statement. It's how we behave. It's the story we tell in the market. And it's what we do when things are difficult for our customers and our brokers.
Yeah, I agree, David. I think that's also extremely well said. So, Chris, I want to turn the question around on you a little bit. You've obviously been a part of some illustrious teams. You're an extremely accomplished individual, so I'm sure a lot of folks would want you as a teammate. But, you know, what made you choose why were you interested in becoming Symetra's teammate?
It's a great question. And I think a big part of it is being part of a team. A lot of why I connected with Symetra and wanted to be a part of it was because Dave has been one of the best teammates that I've ever had. We've been able to work really well together and in a lot of ways do things that people didn't really think were possible. He was super helpful to me to put me in a position where I could be successful and make an impression that made his job easier and more fulfilling. You know, and you look at that and say, I'm attracted to teammates. And so one, Dave is one of the best teammates that I've ever had, but also knowing his connection to Symetra is something that takes that personal relationship and say, okay, it's much bigger than us, because he's put himself in a situation where he's supported by a great team. So he's supported by people who are like him, and he wants me to be a part of it. And that was really attractive, because we have a limited time, right? I mean, on this earth, we want to make a contribution, and we want to be in a place where we can be as successful as we can, and where we're supported and pushed to achieve that success. And I think that that's exactly why I wanted to be part of Symetra.
Yeah. And if I can just give Chris, a reciprocal comment to why I was excited about Chris being part of this team. And I said this before the podcast started. I was telling Chris, and I were just having an informal dialogue. And I said, you know, I was thinking this morning about you and what it is that I love so much is that Chris is, I'll use the word kindness. Like, there's nothing Chris wouldn't do to help other people. There's never something attached to that kindness. And I think that it sort of reinforces who we are as an organization, right? Is, you know, we brought Chris out. Chris, you've been out in market with a number of our brokers and some of our reps, and you're always willing to stop and have a conversation with someone, even if you're tired, even if it's been a long day and multiple meetings. And that makes you a great teammate. The fact that you'll share your journey, you're always very insightful around what we're trying to accomplish, and just bring full circle this idea of wanting to be a teammate. And I couldn't be more excited about the journey we're on together. And we're so early in this process. You know, we're learning each and every day. And so, no, I think, you know, having Chris as a teammate is powerful for the entire organization. And, you know, we'll continue to find ways where Chris can help others within our organization be better at what they do.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. And I, you know, I'd like to share why I'm so excited that Chris is our teammate as well, because I'm deeply excited as well. Your story is obviously inspiring, but I think it also ties very directly to what we do at Symetra. And that's, you know, helping people, inspiring them in some of the most challenging moments they may face in their lives, right? Like, we sell life, disability, supplemental medical insurance, and workforce benefits. You know, it's easy to think of these as commodities or insurance products, but peel that aside and think about the human element, right? What is life insurance? It's something that people depend on when they're grieving, when they've lost the support of someone financially. I mean, some of the worst days you can have in your life get tied around a life insurance claim, of course. Disability, you know, sometimes these are, you know, maternity absences, almost like sort of happy leaves of absences, but many times they're not. They're significant medical challenges that people face. Supplemental medical, we sell critical illness insurance, right? That's something that supports people potentially after a life-altering cancer diagnosis, right? So having someone who we can speak to and speak as part of our brand, you've lived some of these challenges. You've also proven that with resilience, you can come out even better than where you started, right? That's who we want to be. We want to be the people that support people through these challenging times, of course, financially, right? There's a huge financial element to everything we're talking about, but it's more than that, right? It's being there for people when they need us most. It's a bit of a cliche, but I also think it is absolutely the case. So, you know, this is such a fun conversation, and it's just, it's amazing to have you out supporting the brand. It really is.
Thank you. It's my honor.
So I want to go pull us back to maybe a more specific question, you know, Chris, based on your experience. And another thing that ties very much back to Symetra's values and our goals of supporting inclusion. You know, I think visibility for the disabled community, there's no question it's improved over the last, say, 25, 30 years. But I strongly suspect that we've got quite a bit more work to do there. So, you know, what advice would you give people who might still be a little uneasy about approaching someone with a disability?
I think, like approaching anyone, it's about finding what you share in common. It's so easy to look at what is different and have the conversation be about that. But our passions, our dreams, those are the things that we share and that are entirely common and in common. And I think that's what we've got to look at is trying to see the individual, trying not to see what happened, but to see the individual and to see the potential and to really allow ourselves to be surprised. The problem, and I think it's sort of this insidious kind of problem, is that, you know, if you talk about disability, by definition, that means less. And it's not something that gets challenged. And how can we find a way to challenge it? And I think we're all victims of this, right? I mean, it just happens to be a bit more profound for me and some of my peers. But at the same time, it's a matter of trying to see the potential in people as opposed to a reason to dismiss them. And I think that's a shift for us as human beings, but it also is one of those things that if we look at it, we go, this is a great way to look at life in general, to allow ourselves to be surprised. If we do, we're probably going to be surprised a whole lot more than we're not. And, you know, and I think that there's also, you know, there's sort of the flip side of that. It's easy to dismiss somebody, and suddenly that person is a super successful person that we've thought was somebody that was completely worthy of dismissal, right? And it's like, oh, okay, I didn't realize that you were, you know, the owner of the whole company or whatever it is. You know, it's like this is, and I think that's ultimately what we have to do, is try to see people for the first time and not bring our own bias to the situation.
Yeah, Chris, I'd love to share, if I can, Todd, a story. When I met Chris, I think it was more than 25 years ago. We were in a meeting, actually. And I remember walking out, and I was new to this idea of being comfortable around someone who's in a wheelchair and understanding, you know, what do I do? How do I treat this person? And I remember walking out of the meeting, and I said to Chris, and I don't know if you'll remember this, Chris, I said, let me get the door for you. And Chris said, no, let me get the door for you. And I went, oh, right. I don't need to, Chris is a professional athlete, has had all this success. And I was worried about accommodating Chris when in fact, Chris could accommodate me. And I still reflect on that every day when I see someone who obviously has a physical disability. And I try very hard, even though I think our biases take over, to not treat that person differently because. So I remember that like yesterday. It was one of my first opportunities when we worked together in a past life. So
it's awesome. And it's just because I was closer to the door than you were, so I could open it, right?
That's right.
That's fantastic. That story seems to go back decades, David. Am I mistaken?
It does go back decades, no question.
Well, you know, this has been a fantastic conversation. You know, we're at time, but I could go on like this for a while. But I do want to give you each a chance for a last word. At risk of being repetitive, I guess I'll go with this one. You know, David, what makes you most excited about this partnership with Chris, and what does it mean to Symetra going forward? And then I'll ask Chris the same question kind of in reverse.
Yeah, I think what gets me excited is this idea of making sure that the marketplace knows who Symetra is and connecting us in a different way, not around the price of our long-term disability, our life policy, or how we even service the business, but really wanting to connect our brand to our brokers and our customers and even our internal teams in a very humanistic way. Because at the core of everything we do, and I'll go back to what you started this call about, it's about resilience and it's about doing the things that we set out to do and doing them well. And I feel like Chris is going to do a great job helping us bring a different dimension to our go-to-market strategy. And, you know, very, very excited about obviously who he is as a person and the messages that he delivers and our ability to really differentiate in the market with Chris as our brand ambassador.
Thanks, David. So, Chris, kind of same question to you, but in reverse. What are you most excited about?
I think that really when I look at it, the idea of building something great, really, and really that's the thing, and working with great people to build something that's great. But it's I think I did some of this stuff on personal terms. But this is something that's much bigger than me, and to get involved and to be a part of it. And, we talk about it. The theme of this was the journey, right? And this is that journey, and being able to go through the pitfalls and to go through the great times and to find a way to continue to build something that really is great and involves a lot of people. The more successful you are, the more people you're able to involve in that success, I think, really is what it comes down to. And it's much bigger than a personal success to have this this real team success.
Well, I love it. Teammates was among our themes here. Resilience, probably the biggest theme. But, all of this is fantastic. So excited to have you, Chris, on this journey with us. Thank you both for joining us. As I mentioned, this is our season two finale. I love that we're ending on this note. It's a hopeful note. It is a note that shows that, any challenges that come your way, there is a way to persevere and be resilient through them and come out the other side. So, Chris Waddell, thank you so much for joining us. David Sneeweiss, you as well. Really appreciate you both joining us here today. With that, this is going to be a wrap of season two. Thank you so much for joining us. It has been a journey. I hope you've all been along for the entire journey. If you haven't, check out your podcast feed, because we've got a bunch of other good episodes for you. But with that, I am going to sign off. Again, I am Todd Zenn, and thank you so much for joining us.
You're listening to Working Forward, Future of Work podcast series. The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the host and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Symetra Life Insurance Company or its affiliates.